Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the weekend, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to temporarily stop winding down or altering census field operations. The order is in effect until a hearing on September 17th. Here's the backstory. The administration announced a plan to cut counting efforts by a month to September 30th instead of October 31st, which was the original date chosen to make up for delays caused by the coronavirus. A coalition of civil rights groups and government groups filed an emergency request as part of a federal lawsuit. Thomas Wolfe, senior counsel with the Brennan Center's Democracy Program, said the ruling is a, quote, necessary and encouraging first step towards saving the 2020 census from a massive undercount that will disproportionately affect our country's communities of color. The census needs more time than the administration is offering if we are going to get the full, fair, and accurate count that the Constitution guarantees. The ruling buys the census some precious and indispensable time by barring the administration from shutting down the count while the federal courts are still considering our request for relief. End quote. According to the Census Bureau's latest data, only 85% of households have been counted so far. The census happens once every 10 years. It's very important. It determines the number of seats in Congress, votes in the Electoral College, and $1.5 trillion in federal funding for public services. Many groups say that if we do have an undercount, California and New Jersey could lose a seat in the House. Joining us to talk about what is at stake is Devera Cohn, a senior writer and editor at the Pew Research Center. Devera studies and writes about demographics in the U.S., including the census. Before joining Pew, she was a Washington Post reporter for 21 years. Hi, Devera. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, since the census happens once every 10 years, can you first tell us why it is so important?
Well, you alluded to some of that in your introduction. You know, it does determine a lot of political power and money and how that both of them get distributed. As you pointed out, how many seats each state gets in Congress, which means how many votes in the Electoral College, as well as how the federal government distributes an estimated $1.5 trillion a year. And much of that federal money determines how much local communities will receive for social service spending and medical programs and other very important federal efforts. But the census also gives us a picture of social needs. So, for example, where are there young children and where do schools need to be built? Or where do people live and where is there a need for new roads and that sort of thing? Of course, businesses also use that to find out where their customers might be living. So there's a lot at stake here in terms of being known and included in the civic and commercial life of this country.
How many people were counted last time around? Because when you look at the latest data, it says 85% of households have been counted so far, and most people would probably say, well, that's pretty high.
Yeah, what you want, according to the experts, is more like in the high 90s, like 98%, 99%, because any household that doesn't get counted, the Census Bureau has to use what are called statistical techniques in order to try to figure out what information is missing. And so they'll use things like trying to find out what your neighbors are like, and then if you're not counted, they'll just assume that you're a lot like your neighbors. So it's much better to have sort of firsthand information about people. So 85% is certainly far short of what the census would like to achieve.
So let's talk about the count and trying to reach communities of color, undocumented people. In the past, have any administrations politicized the census like the Trump administration is doing this year?
So we're, you know, Pew Research is non-advocacy, and we don't get involved directly in making statements about policy, but I will say that I think everyone agrees that this is the most disrupted census in quite some time, and maybe ever, starting with, of course, the pandemic, which delayed operations, put everything on hold for months. And then there has been a lot of back and forth and changed dates and lawsuits, all of which serves to remove a lot of certainty about when the census will be done and how well it will be done.
So let's talk about the moves by the Trump administration. They issued a memorandum to omit undocumented immigrants from the census headcount. First off, let's talk about that. Why is that really important to ensure that undocumented immigrants are counted? We're talking about, what, about 12 to 15 million, right?
Well, our own estimates are that there are about 10.5 million unauthorized immigrants in the country, and that number has actually come down some in the last decade and then been more or less stable. The census has always counted everybody, and its purpose has been to count everybody who's living in the United States. So the only people that who wouldn't be counted would be business travelers or foreign tourists. Everyone else is supposed to be included. What the Trump administration would like to do is for one set of statistics that's released, which have to do with how many seats each state gets in Congress, they want to exclude those unauthorized immigrants from that count. And they've asked the Census Bureau to come up with a method to do that, which the Bureau has not done in the past. So there's that challenge. Can they do it accurately and at a local level? And then is it legal? And there have been numerous lawsuits filed challenging that memo, the legality of that memo, saying that the census is supposed to count everybody and include everybody, and it's not legal to exclude folks who, even if they don't have documents. So, and also raising the idea, is it practical? Can someone, can the nation actually give an accurate count of how many unauthorized immigrants there are? So that memo has led to numerous lawsuits and also has been playing a role, according to advocates, in this back and forth about when the census counting would end. You mentioned that originally they were going to end the count at the end of October, and they've moved that back to September 30th, and advocates say that that's because, in part, because the president wants to publish the first numbers under his administration, and those first numbers would have the number of seats that each state gets in Congress.
I just want to read a little bit from a Washington Post editorial about this. The headline is, "Excluding undocumented immigrants from the census is doomed to fail, but Trump is all in." And I know you don't talk about politics at the Pew Research Center, so I'll just read what the Post says here. "Like many of Trump's actions and statements on immigration, this latest order is meant largely for the consumption of nativists in his GOP base, for whom the growing number of Hispanic and other immigrants and their U.S.-born children are an electoral nightmare. Rather than reckon with America's diversity, they use every means at their disposal, suppressing the vote, ending asylum, impeding legal immigration, to turn back the clock." And as they point out in this piece, there's a danger here, not only to a Democratic state such as California, but if the census undercounts immigrants, it could also mean a swing state like Florida and a Republican state like Texas would be at risk of losing representation in Congress and significant sums of federal funding. The Post points out that about 775,000 undocumented immigrants are estimated to live in Florida. About 1.6 million are thought to live in Texas. So in addition to possibly losing a seat in Florida and Texas, as I said earlier, California and New Jersey could also lose a seat in the House.
Well, and in fact, we did our own analysis on that because we at Pew Research do national and state estimates of unauthorized immigrants, and we found something similar that in the past the seats in Congress have been based strictly on the total population. Well, if you excluded unauthorized immigrants from that count, California would lose a seat that it otherwise would get. So would Texas and Florida. Should be said that California is projected to lose a seat anyway, so it would lose a second seat under this memo.
Well, if you have any questions about the census, today we're joined by Devera Cohn, senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center. She studies and writes about demographics in the United States, including the census. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Have you filled out your form yet? What questions do you have about the census? It happens once every 10 years, and it is so important, as Devera said, to get those numbers in the high 90s. Right now, 85% of households have been counted. That sounds really high. Imagine if 85% of the population actually voted. That would be amazing. But she says that a high 90, like 98, would be ideal, 99 to count. So what are your thoughts on the census? Have you taken it? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So Devera, what is the deadline at this point? Because it was October 31st, and then the administration pushed it up to September 30th.
Well, a federal judge just over the weekend on Saturday said that they cannot be ended early. So at this point, it's October 31, and the Census Bureau today issued guidance saying that they're not going to be laying off census takers, and they're going to restore some quality checks that they had dropped because of the shortened timetable. So right now we're back to October 31st, but you know, if this continues making its way up through the courts, there would be an appeal, presumably by the administration, and who knows, we could be back at September 30th again.
So again, right now it's kind of in flux, but if you do have internet access, you can fill the form out online, my2020census.gov. Devera, we've done shows before about privacy concerns. Can you address those again for people who are a little unsure about filling out this form online?
Sure. But, you know, I should also add that you can also respond to the census by telephone, or, of course, if you received a paper questionnaire, you can respond by mail. And there is language assistance available over the phone. So that might be a good option for some people. Now, as to your question about privacy, yes, the law now states, federal law states, that your information that you turn into the census is considered private for 72 years. So until 2092, I think it is, what you tell the census cannot be made public or shared with other agencies, including law enforcement, immigration agencies, and so forth. And a census person who does that would have faced jail time and fines. There has not been in recent years any indication that anyone from the census has ever shared that sort of information. Even if the Census Bureau collects records from other agencies, which it's doing now in part because of this attempt to exclude unauthorized immigrants, even if it collects information from those other agencies, it only goes one way. The information comes from that agency, the Census Bureau says, and it will not go, the Census Bureau will not share that information publicly. So there are pretty strong protections, and I think the advocacy groups that are trying to persuade people to respond certainly are trying to make that case. Because they know people are concerned, and they know some people are not aware that, for example, there is not a question about citizenship on the census, even though originally the Trump administration wanted to include that.
Well, thank you for the info about the phone. I wasn't aware that you could do it over the phone. So you can fill it out online, my2020census.gov, and the phone number is 844-330-2020. 844-330-2020. And we will add the Contact Us page on our website. It gives you regional census centers across the country in case you have specific questions. And then there's also the door knockers. And this is really important, specifically for people who do not have computers. You know, maybe people, I mean, these days, Devera, people are working three jobs, of course, with COVID. it's just such a hard time right now overall. Mm-hmm. We've got COVID, we've got massive unemployment. People are struggling to make ends meet. So in many cases, the census is really the last thing on their mind. Can you talk about some of the challenges that you have written about, specifically the people who say they might not participate in this year's census?
Sure. We took a survey in June, and we asked people whether they had participated, and if they hadn't, would they be willing to answer the door if a census taker came? And 4 in 10 told us that they probably or definitely would not speak with a census taker who came to the door. Now, it may be that they would end up changing their mind. The census taker might be very persuasive, or someone they know might tell them, you know, give them advice to talk to the census taker, because they will come back several times, often, if you don't answer the first time. But it is a challenge. I've certainly heard many stories of people who've knocked on census takers, who knock on numerous doors of the day, and maybe only one, they get someone who is willing to answer. Because the folks who haven't filled the census out already, some of them may not know about it, but some of them also may not want to answer.
How has COVID affected outreach efforts in these communities?
Well, it stopped all the outreach that was going to start for a long time. So the census really depends on a lot of in-person events to try to mobilize enthusiasm. And so, especially among communities that have been traditionally undercounted, you mentioned communities of color, poorer neighborhoods generally have been undercounted, immigrant communities. And then, interestingly, young children, children ages newborn to age 5 are the most undercounted age group. Hmm. And the census really depends on a lot of whipping up a lot of enthusiasm in these communities, often with rallies, parades, and that sort of thing. Well, all that stopped for several months. And, of course, the door knocking itself got delayed, and so that makes for some problems in terms of reactivating all that. And then we also know that a lot of people moved. We actually did a survey and found that, in fact, among young adults, under 30, nearly 10% of them had moved at some point because of COVID. So if you're in an address that's different from the one you were in on April 1, which is the April 1 address is where you're supposed to be counted, it can be very confusing.
Right. Well, and then we also have, and we're going to talk about this in about 10 minutes, nearly 1 in 7 Native Americans living on tribal land were not counted in the 2010 census. I mean, that's a pretty big number.
It is. And in fact, I didn't mention tribal folks because I know you were going to talk with someone else about that. But that's a particularly challenging population because often Indian country is very rural and may not have a lot of internet access. And they depend on having census takers come to the door. And that was all locked down for months and really only recently reopened.
Right. And I guess it's just difficult because I'm thinking, I get so much more spam on my phone now. A relative got the packet from the census and said, should I believe this? Is it junk mail? Is it spam? I mean, these days, a lot of people just don't know what to believe because there's so much spam out there. I mean, we're also, talking to our listeners about the difference between a real contact tracer and a spammer who's a contact tracer trying to get your personal information.
Well, let me read you something off the census website. So you can get a lot of good information and answer a lot of your questions by going to 2020census.gov. But let me read you something very short that says, how can you verify that someone is a census taker? Now, if someone visits your home this year to collect information for the 2020 census, check to make sure they have a valid ID badge with their photograph, a U.S. Department of Commerce watermark, and an expiration date, all that on the badge. Census workers may also carry Census Bureau bags and other equipment with the Census Bureau logo. If you still have questions about their identity, you can contact your regional census center to speak with a Census Bureau representative. So I heard you say you're going to put those numbers on your site.
Yes.
So that's another way to do a double check. But there's also on the census site a whole page about rumors, fraud, and scams. At one point, people were saying, you can't get your stimulus payment unless you fill out your census. Not true. Mm-hmm. Some people were saying, is there some link between voting and the census? No. All of that is, rumor mongering. And so you can check out some of those rumors if you go to that census webpage.
Okay. Today we are talking about the U.S. Census with Devira Cohn, a senior writer and editor at Pew Research, where she studies and writes about demographics in the United States. And over the weekend, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to temporarily stop winding down or altering census field operations. The administration announced a plan to cut counting efforts by a month, and a number of civil rights groups filed an emergency request as part of federal lawsuits saying that if they do that, there will be a massive undercount, specifically in communities of color and low-income and poor communities. And the 2020 census is really important because it determines the number of House seats. It determines how $1.5 trillion in federal funding is spent on public services every year. This only happens every 10 years, so it's really important. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have a question from a listener who says, can you give us specific examples of what has happened in the past because of an undercount when it comes to spending?
Sure. If your community isn't fully counted, it doesn't get as much money as it would otherwise be entitled to for a number of important programs, for Medicare, Medicaid, you know, Medicaid helping low-income people with health concerns, for school lunch programs, for food stamps, for all kinds of programs that are based in part on the population. So it's hard for me to say something like, you know, Community X got $1,000 less than it should have because of this. But there are formulas that the census numbers are fed into that help determine how much money communities get or states get. And they're all relying on this basic count.
Well, thank you for that question. What about, in terms of the people who work for the census, so many government offices under the Trump administration have drastically changed. Has anything, to your knowledge, has anything changed at the census under this administration?
Well, the Census Bureau has prided itself on having thousands of employees and only a few of them being politically appointed. Now, that has changed a little under the Trump administration, and by a little, I mean there's still only a few, but they have added some political appointees in some key jobs. Three top jobs were added, essentially, and political appointees were installed there, and some in the, I guess you'd say, census-watching community were concerned that those jobs might be key to the kinds of data that get out. The census process is pretty well, set in terms of what the questions are and what data are published, but there is concern that having some of these additional political appointees could have an impact.
Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Stephen in San Francisco. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Until recently, I was working as an enumerator or door knocker, if you will. And my question is, the guest said that the administration is going to try to exclude undocumented people from the census count, but what confuses me is none of the questions that we ask are about your immigration status.
Right. In fact, the Trump administration wanted to put on a citizenship question, and that was denied by the Supreme Court. The way that they are going to do this is the White House has asked the Census Bureau to use other information they have, not anything collected in the census, but a lot of other information, and I'll list a bunch of it, what they're thinking about using, to come up with an estimate or count, really, of the number of unauthorized immigrants in the country, and to use that then to exclude those folks from the apportionment count. They're collecting a lot of data from the Homeland Security Department, so among the data they're collecting are information about deportation hearings and proceedings. So they could try to use that to identify people who are unauthorized and then try to exclude them, although not everybody who's issued a deportation order ends up being deported because some of them successfully challenge that. So it's unclear how good an estimate they'll get and what exactly the full range of information is they'll use, but they've given some indication of that they'll start by using other government records to try to come up with that number.
Final thoughts before we let you go, D. Vera, just the overall importance of filling out this form in time.
Yeah, one thing that I always like to tell people is you don't just get these census numbers you don't get numbers about how many people are in the population out of thin air. They have to be meticulously gathered, processed, edited, and published. And otherwise, for example, we're a survey organization. In order to take surveys, we have to know how many people there are of different ages or racial or ethnic groups in the country so that we can make sure that the sample of people we ask our questions of accurately reflects the population. Well, we don't have an accurate count. We can't get accurate surveys. Similarly, we won't know, we can't be assured that our political representation accurately reflects the people living in the country and where they live unless everybody or close to everybody responds. Again, with government money, we can't be sure that we're having a fair, accurate distribution of the federal funds based on population counts unless we get nearly everybody responding. So it is an important marker for the country, and as government likes to say, it's the only thing they ask everybody to do. So I certainly hope that we'll have an accurate count.
We hope so, too, and we will continue to spread the word and give information about how to fill it out. Thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
D. Vera Cohn is senior writer and editor at Pew Research Center. She studies and writes about demographics in the United States. And again, if you have not filled out your census form, please spread the word about this. The website is my2020census.gov. The phone number is 844-330-2020. Now I would like to welcome C. Adam Edmo to the show. C. Adam is the tribal community coordinator with We Count Oregon, a community-led effort to ensure that hard-to-count communities understand and take the 2020 census. C. Adam Edmo is Shoshone Bannock, Nez Perce, and Yakima. Hi, C. Adam. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, can you also talk about the importance of filling out the 2020 census?
We Count Oregon is a campaign that we have in across the state, working with hard to count communities, communities of color, and tribes, traditionally marginalized communities. And for us, especially right now in 2020, as tribal communities are concerned, we saw a lot of the CARES Act funding divided amongst tribes based on population. So it can't be more urgent, more important for our tribal communities, especially at this time, to be deeply engaged in the census work.
Nearly one in seven Native Americans living on tribal lands were not counted in the 2010 census. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about you mentioned one of the consequences, which is a huge one, the CARES Act funding. What are some of the other consequences of that?
Well, chronic underfunding is we're no stranger to chronic underfunding in Indian country. We know that the Indian Health Services has never been fully funded for tribal communities. And as a result, we experience alarmingly high health disparities. That can also be said of other streams of funding in other sectors, whether it be business development or agriculture or other types of investments. And infrastructure, they've all been chronically underfunded across Indian country as a whole.
So let's talk about some of the politics here. We have been talking about the lawsuit that was filed by civil rights groups as well as Native organizations. And over the weekend, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to temporarily stop winding down or altering field operations. Why do you think the administration wanted to cut counting efforts by a month?
To be quite honest, I think our current administration feels a level of threat and intimidation by the rising power that's building within communities of color, the diverse voices that are coming forward asking and demanding change for our people and our communities.
Right. And I mean, I'm glad you brought up the health service, because we've done a lot of shows about COVID in Indian country. And I mean, this is directly connected to undercounts and underfunding, just the ability to ensure that people have access to what they need with COVID.
Right. Here we work in support, We Count Oregon works to support the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And I don't know if listeners are familiar with, but the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs not only has one of the highest rates of COVID in our state and region, but also now is without clean running water due to a decades-long deferment of infrastructure and maintenance on their water systems. So not only are we, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, but the folks at Warm Springs have been without consistent clean running water for over 15 months.
For how long?
15 months.
And what's the cause of this?
It's been decades of deferred maintenance, right? So the tribe has worked with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, with the state, with other folks to try and mitigate the issue for its community members. But the tribe had been promised, and I'm not a representative of the tribe, but I'm just trying to assist with the census. But the tribe had been promised some lottery dollars from the state of Oregon. It appears that that's not going to happen. So they made some emergency money available, but things are really dire. And in the middle of all this, right, one of the most important things, you know, the census happening right in the middle of that to try and capture, how many folks we're looking to serve in the Central Oregon region, right? It's our largest reservation here in Oregon.
Hmm. Well, we'll definitely do a show about this. I just pulled up a story from Oregon Public Radio, and this tribe is just a short drive from Portland.
Oh yeah, it's not far from where I am right now, less than 2 hours.
Wow. And according to this piece, the 1855 treaty with the United States gave the United States about 10 million acres for just $200,000 in exchange for promising government services to the Warm Springs tribe, which is just, gosh, a similar story really in so many places across the country. So we'll definitely do a show about that. Can you tell us, what are you doing to reach out to communities like this tribe and just other communities that are usually undercounted in the census?
I think what makes our campaign at We Count Oregon different is that we work in a very community-grounded way. Before the pandemic hit, we had plans to really work with tribes. Summer is definitely a celebratory season across Indian country, throughout the United States, and especially in the Northwest. We have annual canoe journeys. Each of the tribes usually has a Treaty Days powwow that happens. So we were really looking forward to doing that. Now, with COVID happening, we have swiftly pivoted to helping support tribes do online events to serve their tribal members and citizens, to COVID-safe drive-through events that not only you know, provide tablets and laptops for folks to fill out the census, but also distribute, PPE and public health information so that folks know. I mean, at Warm Springs and a lot of tribal communities across the state and region here, folks don't have access to internet and broadband, which means a lack of access to news and public health information that people in, you know, in cities who are in urban areas typically get. So those events have been really essential to making sure that folks and communities have not only information about the census, but also just their basic needs being met.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, C. Adam. We'd love to have you back. And we'd also love to connect with Warm Springs to talk about water issues and other issues affecting that tribe. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
C. Adam Edmo is the tribal community coordinator with We Count Oregon. It's a community-led effort to ensure that hard-to-count communities understand and take the 2020 census. C. Adam is Shoshone, Bannock, Nez Perce, and Yakima. And again, if you have not filled out the census, you can do it online, my2020census.gov. You can also do it over the phone, 844-330-2020. And again, we're still waiting for the deadline right now. It's possibly October 31st based on this federal judge's order, but depending on what happens, it could be September 30th. So regardless, it's important to fill out that census now and be sure to spread the word. Coming up after a break, we will find out why the California Assembly failed to vote on the Garment Worker Protection Act, which would have guaranteed the state's minimum wage to 45,000 garment workers. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.